Blog Talk Radio.
Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
Hello.
All right. Royalty to all. Thank you guys for tuning in to another podcast of Enhancing Awareness Radio. I'm your host, Peru, the Seven Oracle, and this is Motivational Classroom. And guys, today we're going to talk about Lake Lanier, right? And to anybody who's just now listening to Enhancing Awareness Radio, Motivational Classroom is a space where we learn, grow together. I am a student in most podcasts, in which this one is of one that I am more of a student today, right? Lake Lanier, I kept having this dream about a swimming pool in a cemetery. You know what I mean? And this was like a reoccurring dream I had about twice, and right before the podcast, I had it again, but in a different way, right? So I was like, okay, something is here. You know, the ancestors, I feel, may be trying to speak through me to, you know, don't forget about Lake Lanier, what happened at Lake Lanier, right? So I'm sure this is going to be a multiple-part series to this podcast for I don't know what's going to come of it, right? But I do have some avenues and some pinpoints that I want to play. Brother Wisdom is going to be the first about what's going on, kind of like, you know, in current day. And then the mysterious things that happen, and the truth behind, there are multiple places, not only Lake Lanier, but there are places such as Central Park, which I forgot the name of it, but Central Park, Lake Lanier, and I'm pretty sure there's other, Dodger Stadium. So let's see what comes of this podcast, guys. Loyalty and gratitude to the ancestors, you know, who came before us, who may have been forgotten about. But that's what Enhancing Awareness Radio is about bringing things to the forefront in really one big classroom, okay? So first, I want to start with karma, all right? All right, guys, and as you guys know, I'll be back periodically throughout the podcast. And to close out the podcast. All right, guys.
Brother, sister, celestial angels, Brother Wisdom. A little later, I'm going to come to you guys with this video on, we're going to start on the, we're going to be on the minerals, but we're going to start without the, we're going to start on the sulfo salts. And then from the sulfo salts, we're going to move to the nitrates and the phosphates. Oh no, I'll deal with the video. But the first video that's going to go on is going to be about the sulfo salts. And that's going to be dealing with the minerals. When we do that first part of the sulfo salts with minerals, you really begin to get an understanding of the minerals that's within us. But in the meantime, I just want to talk about karma. You know, karma is something that happens. The laws of karma is something that happens because something else happened. All right? You know, it's the cause and effect. Because this happened, the effect is this or that. Okay? This is the basic laws of karma, and we're watching this happen among these earth beings. You know, you gotta just keep in mind that, you know, these beings have literally did damage to our planet. Alright? Karma has no time. Alright, there's no time on karma. How this is going to happen, how this is going to happen. Karma happens when someone awakens, all right? That's when karma happens. So because we have made that awakening, that massive awakening all over the planet, we've made that massive awakening, karma is taking place right now. We're watching it. We're watching it in real time, you know. Look at these orc beings. Look at all the mankind and the humans. Look what they did. You know, wiped out whole generations. You know, look over there in Indonesia. Look over there in Papua New Guinea. What they're doing to our people. Killing and beating our people and, you know, displacing our people. Doing all these things to our people, you know. And they actually think that karma's not going to hit them. You know, look at look at the queen of England, Elizabeth, that fucking lizard ass bitch, fuck her. Look what the fuck she's doing. She's got all of our jewels. She plays a definite role in the destruction of our people. All right, look at this. Look at what they're doing. Look how they wiped out whole generations of our people, and then they have it documented and says that we realized as we begin to kill the Negroids, they call us Negroids. As we begin to kill the Negroids, we realized that the planet was cooling off. So therefore, they continued on because they couldn't take the heat from our planet when they first got here. You know. Look at when they first got here and they had the zoos and had our people walking around in zoos because their people had never seen us before. Their people had never seen any of us before, and they caused us to fall from our power, and they had zoos. They had us in cages and had us walking around in chains. They were having sex with us and molesting us and just, I mean, cutting us up and all kind of things. I mean, they were just doing everything to us that was against nature. And they thought that they will continue to do that. Look how they're killing our people and taking our body parts and all this stuff. You know, karma is getting ready to take place, my people. Karma is getting ready to take place. That's why I tell our people all the time, I say, you need to get some seeds. You need to get yourself, you know, buy some seeds, get yourself some canned goods, water, some beans and dry beans and rice and all kind of other food. You know, because karma is getting ready to take place. Karma is getting ready to take place. Locking our people up in jail. You know, the brother get a life sentence for stealing a pack of bubble gum. And these beings laugh about it. You know, brothers and sisters being locked up. They got the sisters in prison wanting to euthanize them so that they won't have children anymore. You know, or sterilize them, not euthanize, but sterilize them. But that's the euthanization of their reproductive organs. So we can say euthanize. You know, look at what they're doing to our people. Now we got a vision of our people, how they hung us and slaughtered us and enslaved us and did whatever they wanted to do, used us to make money. Karma is coming, my people, because we have awakened. Now look at how they cut down the trees and killing the animals for sport. Huh? Just to cut the head of the animal off and put it on a wall. Cutting down the trees because they said, oh yeah, we need to implement a 5G program and the trees is in the way. And they cut down the trees and they dig up the land and take land away from look how they took away the land from us all over and gave it to some Siberians. Some goddamn Siberian humans. Gave it to the Siberians and called the Siberians Indians and gave them our tribal names. And these Siberians are running around here talking about, oh yeah, we're the native and we're the original people on the land. Alright? This is what they did, my people. How they dig up the ground and constantly taking the oil. And they say, well, you know, the planet replenishes. No, it's not here for you to take. This oil, our planet has veins. This oil belongs to the planet. It's part of the balance and how they offset the balance. Look at the barren lands. You know, when you go into the downtown areas and to the inner city areas or whatever, that's barren land. I don't care how many buildings there are there, that's barren land because all the trees are gone. All the waters and the rivers and the valleys, that land is barren. It can't produce any fruit because the ground is covered up with concrete and buildings and buildings and buildings. Look at what they're doing, how they're stealing the energy from the planet and got us paying them pieces of paper for energy that's free. Karma is coming. How they spray in the sky so that the planet won't be able to, so that we won't be able to enjoy the planet. How they turned our people against each other when we were once in sync and in tune with each other. Now our people are turned against each other. Look at what they've done. And they do this for monetary values so that we can kill each other, so that you have one person in the grave and they taking the organs from that one person. You got another person of our people in the jail cell. You make and you making, they making their monies through the stock market on us, whether we're dead or whether we are fucking alive. Karma is coming, and it's coming this year, and karma is already in the beginning stage. We told you guys 2020 would be a complete and total massacre, and this is what's happening. Karma has no time. Karma waits when it waits for the person to awaken. So if you got somebody who's fast asleep and somebody done broken their house and destroyed everything, when that person wakes up and finds out who did it, that's when karma takes place. Because karma only happens when those who are asleep have awakened. Like we said, karma has no time. Karma has no time at all. So this is what's happening, my people. This is what's happening. Karma is taking place. And these orc beings, this mankind creature and this human creature on our planet, all right, this mankind creature and this human creature on our planet are going to pay. They're going to pay with their dear life. They're going to pay with their blood. All of them. All of them. We've already established that their forefathers started everything, set the precedent. Their forefathers set the precedent, and they carry the blood of their forefathers. I don't care how much they say, oh, we are, you know, I love your black people, and I'm married to one, and I'm dating, I have black friends. You know, we ain't black. That's number one. We ain't black. But you think that you're doing something? You think that you're trying to make up for what your forefathers did? I don't care what you say. You carry their blood, and karma has to take place because the sins of the father fall upon the children. Karma takes place. Karma is taking place, my people. karma is happening right now. This coronavirus ain't this is not something that's just gonna pass away and disappear. No. It's attacking every bloodline, and it ain't finished. There are three more, even more deadly viruses that's on the way. And these viruses are going to be attacking the bloodlines of the forefathers, and all of their forefathers did dirt to us. I don't care when they stopped. They said, well, you know, my great-great-great-granddaddy did this, and my great-great-granddaddy did this, and my great-granddaddy did this, but my granddaddy, he made a change. Okay. All right. Your granddaddy made a change. But guess what? He still carried that blood. You got guilty blood. And karma, the laws of karma, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, says for every soul loss, we're taking three of yours. That's what karma says. Because one of us is equal to three of them. That's how powerful we are. One of us is equal to three of them. So for every one of us is three of them. China, Japan, Korea, all down in Brazil, in South America, Mexico, Russia, all those areas with their forefathers, Canada, all those areas, every place on this planet where their forefathers came in and decimated the land and killed the people so they could take the land. All of them were going to pay. Karma must take place. Karma must take place. It's going to be a beautiful day. At the same time, it's going to be a day of weeping and crying and blood spilling all over the land. Because karma must take place. Karma must take place. All power to the multi-chakra celestial energy beings. Just thinking about it. The water. Look at all the fish that they have pulled out the water for profit. Look at all the animals that they have killed and slaughtered for profit. Got their bodies in grocery stores and freezers. Look at what they've done to the planet, to the people, to the animals, to the land, to the sky, to the seas. Look at what they've done. Karma is going to take place, and it's beginning now. 2021, we see no businesses. Karma is taking place now. This is just the beginning. We ain't even got part of the way through this wonderful, beautiful. Massacre of a year. Karma must take place, my people. Because they've done too much dirt. And there's nothing where for them to go. There's nothing that they can do. There's nothing, nowhere they can hide. Because karma is going to take place. And they will all pay. They will all pay. All power to the multi-chakra celestial angel beings. Peace to you all.
The Blue Ridge Mountains, Georgia. Deep within this mountain range lies Lake Lanier. Millions of people venture to this popular vacation spot to relax and unwind, despite the fact that every year, a shocking number of people drown within its placid waters. And many of their bodies are never seen again.
If you live anywhere near Lake Lanier in North Georgia, you're going to hear every summer all the deaths. There are bad boating accidents, and when somebody goes overboard, it's almost impossible to find them before they drown.
Lake Lanier, from the surface, looks clear. But we hear it time and time again when we respond to drowning. People would say that if he didn't go in the water, come up, struggle, and drown. He went in and never came back up. And this happened time and time again. This lake seems to take people in one gulp.
Lake Lanier is 26 miles long. It has 700 miles shorefront, and it's tempting to attribute the inordinate number of fatalities to the size of the lake. But the fact is, there are lakes of commensurate size in northern Georgia that don't have half that number of fatalities or accidents. So clearly, there is something about Lake Lanier that is cause for alarm.
Since the 1950s, it is estimated that more than 600 people have lost their lives in Lake Lanier. It is such a staggering number of fatalities that for decades, many have come to believe that these waters may be cursed.
Even though there are a lot of people around, there is just some strange vibe about the lake. I feel like a majestic body of water. But you can't deny that there's something odd about Lake Lanier.
When you actually get into Lanier, you get a feeling that you're not alone when you should be alone. Yeah, I don't feel like someone's reaching out to grab me, but the water feels thicker than it should. And what I mean by that is a lady fell out of a boat, and we actually witnessed it. And we ran over there and pulled her out of the water, and she was very upset. And she said, "I'm so embarrassed." And I said, "Don't worry. We see people who do this all the time." And she said, "No, you don't understand. I'm a lifeguard." And she said just when she found herself in that water, it was just like molasses. So all the things that we see in this lake, it finally got so bad and scared the locals so much that we think maybe we're just stuck with a curse we have to live with.
Could the numerous fatalities that have taken place at Lake Lanier be the...
Oh, boy. It is majestic. Underwater cities, that there are many underwater, and this is what's coming up, there are many underwater cities that have been forgotten about, but this is one of the most majestic ones. Yeah.
It's under the curse. It may sound far-fetched to some, but for decades, researchers have been examining the possibility that Lake Lanier could be harboring the power to inflict harm. And according to their investigations, it may have something to do with the history of Lake Lanier.
Lake Lanier is the largest lake in Georgia, a man-made lake meant to provide water and power to the surrounding communities. They actually made it by flooding a valley that had a town in Osterville. They relocate the people that live there, and they just drown the entire town under water.
Osterville wasn't the only town that was affected by the building of Lake Lanier. In the 1940s and 50s, the U.S. government acquired the rights to more than 56,000 acres of land in Forsyth, Hall, and Dawson counties to make room for the 38,000-acre lake and more than 700 miles of shoreline. This included several small towns, and the remains of these communities are still submerged beneath the surface of Lake Lanier.
When they built the lake, they left tons of structure in the water. We've got concrete, roads, bridges. We've got a racetrack under there. We've got standing timber that stands as high as 40, 60, 70 feet from the bottom.
There seems to be a great deal of debris in the water. So it's not an ideal place for people to be swimming or boating or jet skiing or partying. The fact is, it's a dangerous place. Authorities claim that many people drown in Lake Lanier because they get caught in the debris lurking beneath the surface. But researchers studying the lake believe this is only part
source of the dark force drawing people down into its murky depths is a Native American burial ground that was submerged by the lake's construction.
Back in 2007, there was a drought. The water went way low. And because of that, they found an area called the Small Mountain, the Indian Mountain. It's considered a sacred area as long as the Native Americans, the Creeks and the Cherokees, like when they were built by the Army Corps of Engineers. And according to the Army Corps of Engineers, they removed all the bodies while they were creating Lake Lanier. But back when they were building these lakes, they have ground penetrating quick. There's a great likelihood that there are bodies of the Native Americans under the waters of Lake Lanier.
Could the presence of Native American remains beneath Lake Lanier have a connection to the unusual number of accidental deaths there? Has the Native American belief in the power of ancestral spirits cursed Lake Lanier?
Certainly among Native American traditions, we have a widespread belief in curses, particularly land-based curses. And this connects to an overall sort of belief in animism, that the material world is infused with spiritual aspects. Now, many Native American traditions have long-standing, very deep beliefs about how to treat dead bodies, and how not to disturb them, how not to disturb burial sites. The desecration of those is held in Native communities to bring on a lot of bad spiritual energy.
Is it possible that Lake Lanier is home to dark spiritual energy? Perhaps. But what's most surprising is that even though this lake may be cursed, people continue to enter its waters every day.
There's world-class divers that will not dive Lake Lanier. We have 11 to 14 million people a year that are coming here and taking their chances, in spite of the fact that there has been somewhere in between 600 and 700 drownings on this lake. I'm not saying that there's a curse, but I'm saying there's definitely some bad energy. And if it's not cursed, maybe it should be.
Interesting. You know, two things come up in watching that, and that is curiosity killed the cat, and curiosity killed the cat. Yeah, mainly that one. There's another one, you guys, that are more in-depth, you know, and we say Native Americans, but it may be that people just like us, you know what I mean? So there was another one. Here it goes.
This is African American History is American History. Welcome. I'm your host, Harlan Kearsley. This program's goal is to foster understanding, promote discussion, and expand knowledge through stories of historical events, bios of unsung heroes, as well as timely and relevant news stories, which hopefully will paint a vivid picture of the effects of segregation, discrimination, and bigotry on the lives of both blacks and whites. Comparisons will be made between the many racially fractured periods of American history and what's going on right now. Named after Sidney Lanier, a poet and Confederate Army veteran, Lake Lanier in northeast Georgia is a popular weekend destination for millions each year. The lake is located just between Gainesville and Beaufort and is suitable for fishing, boating, and suntanning. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers estimates that some 7.5 million people visit Lake Sidney Lanier annually. But Lake Lanier's existence lends itself to a history of state-sanctioned theft, and racial cleansing.
This is our Black History Introduction Podcast. There it is. Gratitude to the ancestors.
Let's start at the beginning. After the Civil War, slaves in the South were emancipated and granted citizenship through constitutional amendments. But by the turn of the 20th century, all Southern states disenfranchised blacks by passing laws to impede voter registration and voting. Georgia Democrats passed such a law in 1908, resulting in the disenfranchisement of all blacks in the state. In addition, the white-dominated Southern legislatures passed laws imposing racial segregation in public facilities, upholding Jim Crow laws. Now, most rural blacks worked as sharecroppers on white-owned land and were seldom able to get free from poverty. Before its completion in 1956, beneath Lake Lanier were several small towns once occupied by farmers. One of the more well-known towns absorbed by the lake is Oscarville. Although portions of old Oscarville, Georgia still live on the map, the original city survived through lore. Written and oral history did not give the other towns purchased by the state the same grace, and they remain unknown. Oscarville, located north of the perimeter in Forsyth County, began as a small rural town in 1870. After the rape and beating of May Crow, an 18-year-old white woman, on September 8, 1912, an angry mob was formed and began tormenting the black residents of Forsyth County, Georgia. Some reports stated that the beating was so brutal that her eye was dislodged from her skull. The local papers said that she was beaten and died of her injuries. After her death, on September 23rd, the angry mob began burning black-owned churches, houses, and businesses. The two black men who were accused of her death were tried and hung, all on the same day. The local media reported,
"The crowd swelled to over 5,000 spectators. They watched in satisfaction as the lifeless bodies of these two low-browed gorilla-like heroes hung there, swinging in the Georgia breeze. The long gray on the clothesline."
It has also been noted that the grandniece of May Crow, Debbie Vermatt, thought that her assailants were completely innocent based on her grandmother's account of the incident. 2 weeks prior, Ellen Grice, another white woman, was allegedly raped by a black man. An angry militia hung him without any due process, investigations, or proper trial. And many others have lost their lives far too many times for crimes they never committed. As the mob grew increasingly more violent, they ran off, chased down, and hunted the black residents of Oscarville, Georgia. Eventually, the entire black population of Oscarville and Forsyth County, roughly 1,100 residents, were driven out. To this very day, Forsyth County continues to be recognized as one of the most racist places in the United States. Following this racial cleansing, Lake Lanier, a man-made lake, was created. Lake Lanier was forced upon the land of those affluent, self-sufficient blacks. The Buford Dam was also created and flooded in order to cover up the hidden horror of the county's past. There seemed to be very little punishment for racial injustice in Forsyth County. The cover story state and local legislature and news sources sold to the public was that Lake Lanier was to ensure that Georgia was always replenished with a strong water source and to support hydroelectric power for the city of Atlanta. Even in 1956, people continued to lie about the facts of this creative cover-up. White residents even went to the extreme of raising the level of the lake high enough to cover the trees. Later, they came around frequently during the process to cut off the tops of the trees. Some of the stumps from the trees are there even today.
and just to let people know, too, Utah keeps coming up, too. Utah keeps coming up, but there are, across America, the United States, there are many underground cities, and what happened was these cities were flooded, and, you know, a lot of stuff that we think is underground, like what we see now today is stuff that, you know, was built above ground, but really a lot of the sacred land is buried under the ground and in these lakes and the lakes and the reservoirs and all of that. Those are cities that were flooded out.
This is African American History is American History. To be clear, what happened in Oscarsville wasn't a freak occurrence. Between the 1860s and the 1920s, white Americans drove thousands of black residents from their communities. Since then, many of these communities have remained almost exclusively white. For example, Pierce City, Missouri, 1901. The white residents lynched three black men and banished all 300 of the city's black residents. By the year 2000, the census reported that Pierce City had remained majority white out of a population of 1,385. Only three were black. In 1905, the white residents of Harrison, Arkansas, tried to erase the vibrant, although poor, black community in their town with a race riot. The U.S. Census of 1900 revealed a black community in Harrison of 115 people out of 1,501 residents. Relations between the white and black communities were reported as relatively friendly and stable before the riot. Then came the St. Louis and North Arkansas Railroad, later renamed the Missouri and North Arkansas Railroad, which was built through Harrison in 1901. The residents were giddy with visions of prosperity, but on July 1st, 1905, the railroad went bankrupt. This was a hardship for the townsfolk and the black railroad workers who had moved to the area. The white residents needed someone to blame for the misfortune, and the black folks seemed like as good a scapegoat as any. An angry mob went on a rampage in Harrison's black community. Numbering about 30, they burned down homes, shot out windows, and ordered all African Americans to vacate the town that night. From 1910 to 1920, African Americans fled the brutality of the South and poured into northern industrial cities by the thousands during the Great Migration. They came to find work and later to fill labor shortages created by World War I. Even though they had moved to the North, African Americans continued to face exclusion and discrimination in employment, housing, as well as some segregation in schools and public accommodations. However, northern black men fewer barriers to voting. As their numbers increased, their votes emerged as a crucial factor in elections. The war and migration bolstered a heightened self-confidence in African Americans that would manifest itself in what would be called the New Negro Movement of the 1920s. The NAACP was at the forefront of this movement and lobbied aggressively for a federal anti-lynching law. East St. Louis, Illinois, 1917. Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. Rosewood, Florida, 1923. Washington, D.C., 1919. For decades, riots and massacres in all black communities, such as these and many others, were conveniently left out of the school textbooks. It wasn't until just this year that many white Tulsa, Oklahoma residents learned of the massacre in Greenwood, and the destruction of what was once known as Black Wall Street. Since the Reconstruction era, angry whites fueled by resentment and race hatred have used violence to destroy the advances made by blacks. Let us never forget.
Powerful. All right. The video credits, you guys, are going to be in the show notes. I hope you can hear me. But the video credits are going to be in the show notes, guys. Enhancing your awareness is about you doing your own research. So I encourage you guys to, you know, advance on your research. And if you want to share with me, guys, if you have any information on Lake Lanier, I have not visited yet, but it is definitely on one of my to-go-to lists next time I go to Atlanta or be in the Georgia area. So, I'm sorry, y'all. It's just boggling to me what a lot of our ancestors may have went through. You know what I mean? I'm just speechless, really. The truth behind Central Park. So, Central Park, Lake Lanier, and Dodger Stadium. I don't know. I know about Central Park. I forgot the name prior. But it seems to be that a lot of the here's what is screaming at me right now is that when it comes to the history, do we really know? How much research have we really put in, or how much have we connected our own dots to know what really went on? You know what I mean? Because there are so many lies. History, when it comes to history, and this is just allegedly, right? But when it comes to history, there are so many narratives that are constructed. You know what I mean? So you really have to use your deepest intuition to connect the dots on what may have happened. You know, like, what do you feel? And what do I feel about Lake Lanier is that, that's it. Like I said, I'm going to do another part series. Would you guys believe that this podcast has been on the calendar for about 2 years, and I'm just now doing it? And I did it to start off, quote, Black History Month, which is 365, although it's a great way to start the month of February off, right? Because a lot of our ancestors, they came in an era to where, you know, it was about black and white and race and all of the traumas that they went through. And Lake Lanier may be one huge sinkhole or pit, if you will, you know, for the people in the rage in which the real truth and how it happened. Like, if we were to unmask what really happened, and then, you know, they say, like, the sin of the forefathers following the children, you know, there's a lot of rage and anger in those waters, you guys. So it may not be best suited for certain people, you know what I mean, to come against a tsunami or hurricane that will suck you into its vortex. Okay, so.
For all the curious cats out there who think to themselves, hey, the history of this.
Oh, I hope her voice is not going to be annoying to me, but we'll see what she's talking about.
Hi, friends. I hope you're having a wonderful day today. My name is Bailey Sarian, and I'd like to welcome you to the Library of Dark History. Now, this is a safe space for all the curious cats out there who would think to themselves, hey, is history really as boring as it seems in school? Oh, nay, nay. This is where we can learn together about the dark, mysterious, dramatic stories our teachers never told us about. So, I hope you're having a great day, because this story is dark. I mean, all the stories are dark, but, like, this one's, they're all dark. Okay, great. Hi. So, how many times have we sat here on this very day and talked about how colonizers swept across the United States and erased Native communities? I mean, it's a lot. It's a very common theme here. But what if I told you it wasn't just the Native communities and that it didn't stop after the 1800s? Well, hopefully that's not surprising to you, because I've actually talked about that too. So remember when we talked about Rosewood, it was like the very second episode, where an entire town drove out all of the black residents after a white woman lied about being assaulted. And over on my murder mystery makeup, maybe you watched the video I did about the Tulsa Race Massacre. It was about essentially angry white folks who decided to take revenge on a black community and burn it to the ground. And it was like a black Wall Street. I mean, super successful, money was being made, and people in Tulsa, Oklahoma, burned it to the ground because they didn't really want to see any black Americans making more money than them or just being successful, having their own thing. There are stories like this in communities all across the country that have literally been erased. And not only have they been completely erased, but they've also been replaced. So today we're going to talk about three of these communities: Oscarville, Seneca Village, and Chavez Ravine. But today you know them as Local Lake, a public park, and a base stadium. Just kidding. Not funny. Okay, so now I'm going to open up my book to chapter what? What chapter is this? Oh, what is that? Okay, found it. So our first story begins in New York City in the early 1800s, the Big Apple. But back then, farms dominated a ton of the landscape. And then soon, huge churches and universities were popping up, and new ideas were being shared. It was starting to fill with hustle and bustle, and more importantly, it was starting to fill with people, and lots of them. At the time, New York actually had one of the biggest populations of formerly enslaved people in the nation. And some of this freed population started buying property and land in an area of the city that was known as Five Points. Because Five Points was a primarily black neighborhood, it was neglected by the city. Entire families lived in rundown houses, old horse stables, and abandoned industrial buildings. Sometimes they would convert these buildings into really uncomfortable one-room apartments, and multiple families would share and live in them. And Five Points started getting a really bad reputation as a place full of poverty, crime, and disease. Charles Dickens even wrote a book about how rough it was living in this neighborhood. Now, you might say if it was so bad, why didn't they just move? And, I mean, come on, it wasn't that easy. Because, you see, although they had bought the land in Five Points, a lot of people living in these converted buildings were living there illegally. That is because most black people were not allowed to buy or rent property in the state of New York. But then, in 1825, a pair of white landowners decided to start selling some farmland they owned near Five Points to anybody who wanted it, regardless of the color of their skin. Now, one of the men who jumped at this opportunity was a man named Andrew Williams. Andrew leaped at the chance and bought himself a few plots of land for the low, low price of $125, which today is still only $3,200. Now, Andrew was a formerly enslaved man who had become a shoe shiner, and he saw all this land as a way to make his place in the world. And he wasn't the only one, because as soon as word spread around Five Points that there was like a ton of land nearby being sold for dirt cheap, people were scooping it up. As more and more people started buying up the land, the community grew and started to become known as Seneca Village. Just 30 years later, in 1855, Seneca Village was a full-blown community. I mean, there was a school, a church, cemeteries, and even a community garden. I mean, it was amazing. It was a 300-person black community, and they lived almost completely outside of any white influence. Seneca Village was also considered the most politically active black community in the country, the entire country. Now, this was because during the 1800s, in an effort to stop black men from voting, There was a law that said you had to own at least $250 in property, but in Seneca Village, half of the people living there owned their own homes and that land valued over the $250 limit. And this resulted in 90% of Black voters in the entire state of New York were residents of Seneca Village. That's pretty badass. But while Seneca Village was thriving, the rest of New York was not. You see, in nearby Manhattan, the area was becoming extremely overcrowded. The entire place had become unsanitary, full of diseases, trash, and even animals just running down the street. So instead of putting money towards fixing the actual issues they were facing, there is like a proposal for a huge park in the upper part of Manhattan. Everybody loved this idea of a park. Yes, a park. Great, we love a park. But there was one teeny tiny problem. Now, in order to build this park, houses had to be torn down. And to make it worse, the houses in question just so happened to belong to wealthy white landowners. These homeowners were like, what? No, no, we are not building a park here. Go build that somewhere else. So they filed an injunction with the court to stop the city from tearing down their houses. But the city still really wanted their big fancy park. And they realized they're going to have to like kick someone out of their home in order to achieve this goal of theirs. So they start looking around to see who would be the easiest to kick out. And surprise, surprise, they pick the nearby thriving Black community of Seneca Village to be the new location. But let's pause for an ad break really quick. Hold on. Adding new pieces to your wardrobe is not that easy for some of us. Figure out, I don't know, what shops to go to. You got to try on a bunch of different pieces, figure out what works. I don't know. For me, it's exhausting. But that's where Stitch Fix comes in. Whether you need date night dresses or maybe just cozy loungewear, Stitch Fix can help you refresh your look. You can schedule a fix, and a stylist will send you 5 pieces that fit your style, size, and price range with no subscription required.
I'm sorry, guys, about that. It's like every...
To be honest, I usually love most of the things they send me.
It's like, you know, I paid not to have ads, but it's like... This is how you submerge or attempt to submerge your shit into, you know, to fuck up the whole flow, guys. Yeah. And it's all done by design, but when it comes to Pinnacle Village, guys, it's Central Park, all right? Well, I knew she was going to be kind of annoying. And, yeah.
So, how do you clear out a community of thriving, happy people? The city's plan was just to offer the citizens of Seneca Village some money to cough over their land and their homes. And as if this wasn't insulting enough, the money that they offered was not even like what the land slash property was worth. So the people of Seneca Village obviously did not want to accept the deal. And Andrew, remember him from earlier, so he remembers what the rich white people did when they didn't want to give up their homes. And he convinces the Seneca residents to file a court injunction. Andrew and the Seneca Village community filed the injunction to save their homes. It worked for the white people, so it should work for them, right? They have the same case, same exact situation is going on. But unfortunately, as we know, it didn't work the same for Seneca Village citizens. And I think it's a safe assumption to make because racism is happening here in this story. So the judge ignores the people of Seneca for 2 full years. And when the judge finally gets around to their case, perfectly legal. In fact, the judge says that the city technically doesn't have to pay the citizens at all, and that the city can just take their homes, their land, goodbye, see ya. And if they did so, the city wouldn't be breaking a single law. And this law the city used to basically steal this land was something called eminent domain. Eminent domain means that the government has the right to just take any land or property without asking, even if it's private property. They just had to say that the property they're stealing will be for public use. In this case, it's going to be a park. Hi. The logic behind this law is that a few people will suffer, but in the long run, everyone's going to benefit. So eminent domain may sound boring, but it's also a bit of a loophole for governments to basically do whatever they want with someone's home or their land, or in this case, of Seneca Village, an entire community. And despite pushback from Seneca residents, in 1857, the city took over the land using eminent domain. Once they had the land, the city tore everything down and built a big-ass park. That's so lame. A park? Yeah, a park. Now, if you haven't guessed it yet, the park is a super famous park that you've probably heard of. Baby, it's Central Park. In New York, Central Park, iconic. Yeah, the setting of basically every like 90s rom-com with its autumn leaves and long twisting paths. A lot of people get murdered there too. Central Park is a United States landmark. People come from all over the world just to see it. But we barely talk about the land that it was built on. You know, how they snatched the land away from people who already were thriving and had a whole community and whatnot. I think it's safe to say most people don't want to talk about what happened to the Black community of Seneca Village back in 1857. Lives were uprooted, and any hope of generational wealth as a result of property ownership was destroyed. Not to mention the erasure of a safe haven for Black residents of 1800s in New York. But the city didn't care about that. I mean, they wanted a park, point blank period. They're like, we want a park. We don't have a park, you guys. We don't have places to have picnics. Now, don't get me wrong, eminent domain is super fucked up and is often used to target communities of color, but it's technically legal within our system. And this is a good example of what we as a society call institutional racism. But when institutional racism doesn't work, what do the powers that be do to get what they want? Well, they turn to uglier methods. And there's no better example of that than the story of Oscarville, Georgia. Oh, yes, we have another example, bitch. Let's pause for a quick little ad break.
Oh, God.
Did you know that by choosing one used garment instead of new, you can save 77 gallons of water? Yeah. ThredUp, an online... Taylor Law.
Oh, wow.
ThredUp also has an easy return policy.
When are they going to put ads in this shit? So yeah, Oscarville is Lake Lanier, what we were just talking about, you guys. So these are just examples of how, you know, how a lot of our sacred land, you know, people, innocent people, you know, not harming anyone, were used and killed and, you know, of their homes, you know what I mean, just to build these landmarks, guys. So...
12, and we're in a small town of Oscarville, Georgia, the population that was 90% white and 10% black. Oscarville was located in Forsyth County, where most of the black population had been free since the end of the Civil War and typically worked in the nearby cotton fields. Most of them made a decent enough living to be able to build a community for themselves in the area. Like Seneca Village, they managed to build some churches and schools and even a few businesses like hardware stores. And also like Seneca Village, Oscarville also provided a bit of a safe haven for the black community. But even though Oscarville was a safe haven, this was still the Jim Crow South. Not to mention there was like tension in town because just 6 years earlier, a series of riots in nearby Atlanta ended with white mobs killing dozens of black people. So there's like always this feeling going on in the air that something bad was about to happen. And then in September of 1912, that something bad did indeed happen. On September 5th, 1912, to be exact, a white woman named Ellen Grice wakes up in bed in her small house just outside of Oscarville. She yawns, stretches her arms and legs, and when she turns around, she sees a man lying next to her in bed. It's a black man. She screams at the top of her lungs, and she jumps out of the window to escape. Ellen goes into town. She starts telling everyone that she had been assaulted. And then everyone goes into panic trying to find, like, who is this man that did this to her? Now, Ellen was well known in town because she was the wife of a big wig farm owner. So this was, like, a really big deal. And rumors are just flying around town. But it seemed that most people believed that Ellen Grice was sexually assaulted and that her attacker had somehow got away. So the police start arresting literally every black man they can find. And then huge mobs surround the courthouse where all the men are being held, demanding justice for what happened to Ellen. One of the people witnessing what was happening at the courthouse was Grant Smith. Grant was a local Black preacher, and he could tell that tensions were mounting. So he tried to reason with the crowd. He tried. And Grant was saying that everybody needs to, like, just calm down and consider that, I don't know, maybe there's holes in Ellen's story here, okay? He was basically saying, hey, maybe Ellen wasn't attacked, which is very brave. There were rumors going around that she was having an affair, and she didn't want to get caught. So she ended up changing her story. Now, as you can imagine, this didn't go over very well with the already very angry crowd of white people, and immediately they go after Grant. They beat and they whipped him to a pulp, and then they put a rope around Grant's neck and they start to pull him up. At this point, the sheriffs decide that this is just a step too far. I mean, the whipping was fine, but, you know, the rope, not cool. So the sheriffs decide to cut him down to take him into the courthouse for protection. But at this point, it was too late to stop the crowd, and it had turned into just a full-blown angry mob. It's so annoying. It's like they're totally – it's like, why are you mad at the wrong person? This person has nothing to do with anything. We don't get it. Why? Why? This mob got so intense and violent that the mayor had to call in the military and issue a curfew for Black residents, not the white ones. They're fine. White people could go on raging and, like, do whatever they want. But Black people, they needed to go home. They are dangerous. Eventually, they had to declare martial law where the military takes charge until things can get back under control. Okay, so we've got martial law, an angry mob, and a preacher beaten to a pulp, and shit hasn't even hit the fan yet. Just 4 days after the incident with Ellen, on September 9th, an 18-year-old white woman by the name of May Crow, she's attacked. Now, the last time anyone had talked to May, she was going for a walk in the woods. But the next day, she was found unconscious under a tree. May then slipped into a coma for 2 weeks and then eventually died. Once again, the community worked itself into an outrage. And once again, another innocent white woman had been attacked, but this time she died. Now, there was no evidence that May Crow had been raped, but the mob didn't care because they were all starting rumors and saying that she was. And everybody decided to just go with it. So rumors are starting to swirl around all over the county that there was a series of Black men who were out trying to rape white women. Again, no evidence of this, okay? No proof, nothing. It didn't matter. The white people in the community were convinced and they just wanted justice. They wanted a reason to rage. So the white members of the community of Forsyth County were out for blood because of this quote-unquote crimes attacking white women. Now again, if you've been paying attention, there's no real evidence to support this statement. But that didn't matter, and they decided to recruit the help of a group called the Night Riders, which sounds like a cool name. But the Night Riders were not cool at all, okay? They were basically a rebrand of the KKK. You see, right after the Civil War, the Klan had gone out of favor and hadn't been an official organization since 1871. But just because the organization wasn't a thing, it doesn't mean that people stopped being racist and, like, getting together. So that's how the Night Riders came to be. Technically a new group, same people, same goals, rebrand. So historians say that the Night Riders considered themselves a vigilante group who joined forces to destroy what they called Black insurrection, but they also protected the white community at all costs. So they go around on horseback, kidnap Black men and women, tie them up, and drop them off at jailhouses. So the Night Riders are patrolling the area looking for people that they believed killed May Crow. One of the people they targeted was a man named Rob Edwards. Rob had been put in a jail cell for his protection since it was known that the Night Riders were looking for him. They were coming for him. But that didn't stop the Night Riders. They rallied thousands of angry white people, and the mob broke into the cell and murdered Rob. Oh, my God. Afterwards, they dragged his body through the street and hung him from a telephone wire. Jesus, Lord, God. And what was the proof they had on Rob? There was a couple of Black teenagers who were arrested on suspicion of assaulting Ellen Grice, and they were put on trial. It's almost as if these boys were being offered up to stop the mob from doing angry mob shit. They just needed a sacrificial lamb in a way. And to make matters worse, The trial finished in just a few hours. It wasn't like a real trial. Trials usually take weeks, sometimes months for something like this. And despite having freaking no evidence, both teens were convicted and sentenced to death by public execution. But at this time, public execution was, it wasn't even legal in the state of Georgia. But again, that didn't matter, okay? The mob still wanted blood, and they needed some kind of performance, and it, boys were executed later that week. Fucking brutal. This is awful. Unfortunately, this did not satisfy the mob. At least one historian says that the people of Forsyth County claimed that they were afraid of a black rebellion, which was, it wasn't even a thing, okay? But the white people of Oscarville, they just didn't care. And in an attempt to get rid of this fake rebellion that they made up in their minds, they decided that they should just start burning down the homes and the churches of the black community because that would prevent whatever the fuck they think is going to happen. Buildings that were not burnt down would be targeted by random gunfire. Fake notices full of racial slurs were printed saying that the black residents of Oscarville had 24 hours to get out. These notices actually said that the black residents had to leave by law, even though this was illegal. This was not true. Whether they believed that these notices were real or not, I mean, they could tell that this situation was no longer safe for them. And in just 2 months, almost the entire black population of Forsyth County had completely left. This included all of the town of Oscarville. You happy? You got what you want, you shitheads. Not the white people, the white people. In 1910, there were over 1,000 black residents in the county. Just 10 years later, there were only 9, and they all worked for one farmer. So for a long time, Oscarville was nearly a ghost town and would stay that way for almost 30 years. The original citizens of Oscarville never returned. There were still a couple of people living in the ghost town of Oscarville, but then the Georgia government used eminent domain to force them out. And why did the Georgia government force these people out, you may be wondering, asking? Was it so they could rebuild this town and give it back to the original citizens? Of course not. You know, no. I wish. No. They did so they could take it and turn it into a lake. Yay! So what was once Oscarville is now submerged under the waters of Lake Lanier. Oh, do you want to get murdered there too? Oh my God. So we got, okay. Now, if you live in Georgia, you've probably heard of Lake Lanier. You may have even been there for a swim or on a boat. But not many people actually know that the lake is actually a flooded town that an entire black community was forced out of. Now, for the past few years, Georgia has experienced crazy weather. And sometimes the drought will be so bad that the lake's water gets incredibly low. And they say when this happens, old parts of Oscarville will reappear, such as the remains of old burned up homes and shops, or even like old street signs. Now, the taking of Oscarville was incredibly violent, but no one tried to stop it. And Georgia even sealed the deal legally by enacting eminent domain. And instead of apologizing and maybe, I don't know, returning the town, they flooded it, out of sight, out of mind. That should be America's slogan. Out of sight, out of mind, baby, right? I mean, what happened in Oscarville and what happened in Seneca Village, I think we can all agree here, was extremely fucked up. But those places weren't the only places it happened. I mean, it's happened a shit ton. This is only a small little fraction. And also, it wasn't just black communities that were affected, but any community of color. And the reasons they were erasing the communities became grosser and grosser. Plus, what they started replacing these communities with became more and more stupid. Because if you think a park and a lake are dumb enough reasons to kick out a whole town, wait till I tell you about the town that got replaced by a baseball stadium. Yeah, baseball. Oh, but I have to pause for an ad break. BRB. Sometimes it can be so easy to fixate on the negative, like when I have a bad skin day or maybe I'm feeling extra bloated. Sometimes it could just bring my whole day down. Well, or just my whole mood down. But it's important to focus on loving and taking care of yourself, right? One of the best forms of self-love is taking care of your skin. You can feel good on the inside and out. And that's why I'm always excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe's goal is to help you feel confident in your own skin. Whether you're dealing with breakouts, signs of aging, or acne scarring, Apostrophe will help you love the skin you're in. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed oral and topical medications that are clinically proven to help clear acne. Apostrophe connects you with a board-certified dermatologist who will create a personalized treatment plan that is perfectly tailored to your unique skin. Simply fill out Apostrophe's online quiz about your skin goals and medical history. Then you're going to snap a few selfies, and your dermatologist will create your customized treatment plan. Apostrophe treats all types of acne, from hormonal acne to facial acne, and even chest knee, back knee, butt knee. You know, they treat breakouts from head to toe. One of my favorite things about Apostrophe is that you don't have to go to the pharmacy and wait in line to get your medication or the treatment, or you don't have to go anywhere. It's just so convenient. Everything is online, on your time, and then you're going to wait for your stuff to show up in the mail. Boom, shakalaka, easy, breezy, beautiful. It's Apostrophe. I have a special deal for my audience. Save $15 off your first visit with an Apostrophe provider at apostrophe.com/darkhistory when you use the code darkhistory. This code is only available to you, my listeners. To get started, just go to apostrophe.com/darkhistory and click begin visit. Then you're going to use code darkhistory at sign up, and you'll get your first visit for only $5. That's Apostrophe, apostrophe.com/darkhistory, and use that code darkhistory to get your dermatologist crafted treatment for $1. A big thank you to Apostrophe for partnering with me on today's podcast. Now we're going to head over to Los Angeles. That's where our next story is taking place. Now, way back in the mid-1800s, when Los Angeles was still part of Mexico, there was a huge canyon. I'm talking no homes, no businesses, just sweet, beautiful nature. It was purchased by a local politician named Julian Chavez in 1844 and became known as Chavez Ravine. Just a couple years later, Los Angeles becomes occupied by the United States, and also Julian Chavez dies. The two things are not related, but they happened around the same time, okay? So unfortunately, we don't know a lot about Julian Chavez, but his dream was to create a strong Mexican-American community in the heart of Los Angeles. And although Julian wasn't around to see it, his dream started to become true. And by the time Los Angeles and the state of California were officially part of the United States, Mexican-American families began to move and build houses. And soon there were schools, churches, farms popping up all in the ravine. And multiple communities started to form. These communities were known as Palo Verde, La Loma, and Bishop. Now, these were very tight-knit communities. I mean, the kind of place where people would just leave their doors unlocked, knew everyone's name. Love that. Now, the communities were a little bit more rugged. The houses were handmade, wooden structures with no indoor plumbing or electricity. They built a community with whatever materials they could afford, and because of this, it was really common for the press to paint the communities as an eyesore. Now, Los Angeles couldn't have this huge eyesore right in the middle of their beautiful new city, so the city of Los Angeles weaponized the law to get rid of this community, only this time, they didn't just use eminent domain. Oh, nay, nay. This time, they used something called redlining. Okay, so stick with me on this one, because the background on redlining, it's very long, it's very complex, and I think they did that on purpose, so we won't understand it. But to sum it up as easily and quickly as I can, it was created in the 1930s to help people buy homes after the Great Depression. In order to figure out how big of a home loan people could get from banks, neighborhoods were color-coded, green, blue, yellow, and red. Now, green, they would label like a neighborhood green. Green would be the best neighborhood, okay? And then another neighborhood would be red. Red, you didn't want to be there. It was the worst. This is why it was called redlining. So the banks, they didn't want to lend money to people in the red area because they assumed the people living there were poor and wouldn't be able to pay back the loans. So if your neighborhood was red, it was considered blighted. Now, that's the actual term they used. The word blighted is a farming term, meaning that the neighborhood is completely beyond repair. That's your word of the day. Try to use it in a sentence. My big toe is blighted. Does that work? Great. Okay. I did it successfully, and I hope you do too. Now, because this is dark history, we know something's wrong with the system. And with redlining, the problem is these ratings were not determined in an objective way. They were filled with racist criteria that labeled white neighborhoods as desirable, aka green, and communities of color as blighted, which brings us to Chavez Ravine in the 1940s. But before we get into that, we got to pause for an ad break. So whatever your business is, whether you're selling a product, a service, running a blog, you really need a website to showcase your business to your existing and potential customers. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform where you can build a beautiful and professional website to run your business. I know that so many of my listeners are business owners, right? And it's really cool to see many of you turning your passions into your career. Squarespace has so many incredible features like their powerful analytics tool to help your business. It helps you gain powerful insights into who's visiting your site and how they're interacting with your content, including page views, traffic sources, time on site, most read content, audience, geography, and so much more. This data is so important for any business owner to constantly optimize your business. You can also grow and engage your audience with Squarespace email campaigns. Create powerful email content that matches your website with your existing products, blog posts, and logos so your messaging is consistent and effective. You also own all of the content you put on Squarespace platform because they offer one-click data portability. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/darkhistory to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/darkhistory to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Now, you probably won't be surprised to learn that Chavez Ravine was considered to be blighted in the 1930s, and a few decades later, in the 1950s, the city of Los Angeles took Chavez Ravine being blighted as a green light to get rid of this eyesore. I mean, it's red, so nobody cares about it, right? So this is where we welcome back to the scene eminent domain. With this law, Palo Verde, La Loma, and Bishop would become a massive public housing project known as Elysian Park Heights. The plan was to create government funding housing consisting of apartment buildings and two-story townhomes. They would also build new schools and playgrounds. And when the citizens sold their houses so the new community could be built, they would be allowed to be first in line to buy these new homes. So it kind of sounds like a great deal, right? Great. But it turns out that most of the people were offered just a few hundred dollars around there for their houses. Great. And this was at the time of 1957 when similar houses would cost a few thousand dollars. Some of the people who lived in Palo Verde, La Loma, and Bishop ended up taking the deal. I mean, they didn't really have any other option. But most of them just decided to ignore the city's request to move out. So the developers were like, well, what if we could give you, I don't know, less cash? The developers decided to offer the residents who weren't leaving money. They told them that the longer they wait, the less that they're going to get. Well, this actually worked for the developers. By 1957, a large number of Chavez Ravine residents ended up leaving, but there were still some people who refused to leave their homes. They thought the federal government wanted the land so bad, then, I don't know, maybe they'll pay up. But sadly, they were wrong. The government decides they're done playing around and basically forced most of the remaining residents to take even less money than they had been offered in the first place. The whole place was mostly deserted, except for 20 families who still refused to leave. And then the housing project the government was using to force everybody out comes to a complete stop in 1958. Now, for the families at the time, this must have seemed like a huge relief. They're like, oh, good. Thank God. If the project is over, then we can just, like, go back to our house, right? But the thing was, the federal government now owned most of Chavez Ravine. They had bought it all up for this housing project. But the new mayor that stopped the housing project also wasn't a fan of allowing the Chavez Ravine to be left alone. I know, it's messy. So this mayor, with the approval of the city council, decides to buy what was Chavez Ravine from the federal government, and then the federal government only has one stipulation for the land. And you're probably wondering, like, well, is it to give back to the families? No, of course not. The federal government says that whatever Los Angeles does with the land, they have to use it as a public space. So parks and lakes again, right? Great. And there was one guy who saw this as a golden opportunity. Okay, so this guy, his name was Walter O'Malley. He was born October 9th in 1903. Now, Mr. Walter, he loved sports. He was like, yay, I love sports. And he purchased a baseball team in Brooklyn, and he had this idea of moving it out to Los Angeles. But this team he bought, they named a stadium. And it just so happened that Los Angeles had a bunch of land, and they had to use this land as a public space. Oh, my God, wow, just like everything fell into place. And last time Wally checked, a baseball stadium was definitely a public space. So Wally didn't have to put up much of a fight, and in 1958, 352 acres were his. Wally quickly announced that his newly acquired property will be the new home of the Dodger Stadium, which is kind of interesting because the privately owned Dodger Stadium is technically considered a public space. So what do we do with that information? We fucking rage. So now the Dodgers had a new, shiny Los Angeles home. I mean, all they had to do was kick out the last remaining families. But these last few families weren't going to give up without a fight. So in May of 1959, the police had informed the families that this is their final warning, okay? They will soon be removed by force if they don't leave because the land had been sold to this dude Walter. But the residents continue to just ignore their warnings. This is their home. They never agreed to freaking sell it. Who's Walter? We don't care. But on May 9th, the police show up and literally pull people out of their homes, breaking down their doors right in front of them. All sorts of aggressive. Sheriff deputies would kick down the door of many families' homes, and movers would start hauling out their furniture while the family was forced out. There was one woman named Avrana who was 56 years old and was not going to take this thing down, okay? She started throwing rocks at the cops, and she was screaming in Spanish, like, why don't the Dodgers go play in the mayor's backyard? Another woman was dragged out kicking and screaming by four deputies. They handcuffed her as she sat on the ground and watched her house get bulldozed just minutes later. Can you imagine getting handcuffed for what? Getting removed from your home, and then you have to watch your home be bulldozed to the ground. How is this legal? Oh, eminent domain? How is that even legal? Crews arrived and started knocking down the rest of the houses and any trace of the community that had once existed there. Within just a few months, construction officially began on Dodger Stadium. And again, all of this was completely legal. Now you know. Now you know. Now we know. It's all fun and games until you know. So what am I getting at with all this? Imagine if Seneca Village or Oscarville or Chavez Ravine remained in the hands of those who rightfully owned it. Not only were their lives have been undisturbed, but the generations that came after them would have benefited from the property values increasing over time. Mm-hmm. And so when people remove this ability, it doesn't just impact the person who they took it from. This hurts the entire family lineage and the community that would have benefited from it. So it's just like a big ass ripple effect that happens, and it's not fair. It's not right. I think it's, I mean, hello. So today, Seneca is a park that New Yorkers use to escape the city madness. Oscarville is under a lake people do beer bongs on. And Dodger Stadium is a place where you bond with your kids over violently overpriced hot dogs. It's like so crowded there. But to all the people displaced in order to create those things, it was home. They say knowledge is power. But what do we do with this knowledge? Let me know down below. Well, thank you, everyone, for hanging out with me today and learning something new. Remember, don't be afraid to ask questions or just be like a curious cat because something always comes from something. The more you know. Now, I'd love to hear your guys' reactions to this story. Did you know any of this? I sure did not. So make sure to use the hashtag Dark History over on social media so I can follow along and see what you're saying. Don't forget to join me over on my YouTube where you can watch these episodes on Thursday after the podcast airs. And you can also catch my murder mystery makeup, which drops on Monday. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. You make good choices. And I'll be talking to you next week. Goodbye. Sorry to be such a Debbie Downer. Dark History is an Audio Boom original. This podcast is executive produced by Bailey Sarian, Kim Jacobs, Dunia McNeely from 3Arts, Justin Cummins, and Claire Turner from Wheelhouse DNA. Produced by Lexi Kiven. Research provided by Ramona Kivett. Writers, Jed Bookout, Michael Oberst, Joey Scavuzzo, and Kim Yagid. A big thank you to our historical consultant, Vincent Montalvo, and the organization Buried Under the Blue. And I'm your host. Hi. Bailey Sarian. Goodbye. Hi, friends. How are you? I hope you're having a wonderful day today. My name is Bailey Sarian, and I'd like to welcome you to the Library of Dark History. Applause, applause. Thank you. Thank you. I'm here all day. This is a safe space for all the curious cats out there who are like, hey, Bailey, isn't history really super boring, actually? Let me tell you, no, this is not boring. This is actually very interesting stuff we're talking about. We're going to learn all the dark, mysterious, dramatic stories that maybe you didn't learn about in school. Okay, it's a lot of fun. It sounds boring, but it's a lot of fun. I'm having a blast. Are you? Great. So today's story is about Hawaii. So you're probably wondering, well, what the heck is going on with Hawaii? Like, what could be dark about that? Well, I mean, first of all, it wouldn't be surprising if George Lucas heard the story of Hawaii, and that's how he came up with Star Wars. Seriously, this story has real-life rebels, a legit evil empire, and its very own Princess Leia. Yep, that's right. But I'm not talking about a galaxy far, far away. I'm talking about a little bit of paradise in the Pacific that would one day become the 50th state. Now, before I get into this story, Hawaii has a very complicated history that crosses over international waters into some crazy legal shenanigans. There are some important things we won't have time to cover, but I definitely suggest you do some digging on your own if you're a curious cat like myself. And think of that as maybe homework. I know, I'm sorry. I don't mean to give you homework, but it's like extra homework if you want to know more. It's an option. Also, if you're new here, hi, my name is Bailey, and I cannot pronounce names, okay? And this story, let me tell you, it's got some names that are going to be challenging to me, and I don't mean any disrespect. I'm going to try my damnest best, is that a word? So don't drag me in the comments too bad, okay? I'm going to mess this up, but I'm trying my goddamn best. That's all that matters, is that you try your best too. Thank you. That was my motivational speech for today. Okay, so let me open up my book to chapter Hawaii. Here I go. You know, this book is getting heavier and heavier as time goes on. It's just full of dark secrets. Oh, here we go. Ooh. It's not looking.
All right, guys. So, powerful guys. I'm gonna go ahead and end this here, guys. I wanted to just keep this short as I am still learning about Lake Lanier history, because I'm one of those ones who fell asleep in history. So how did the U.S. steal Hawaii? That was the next one that was coming up. So I'm gonna listen to her series as well, but I just want to keep it short, sweet, and simple, you guys. Just kind of as the introductory to these ancient monuments, right? So please join me every weekend. I'm on at 11 a.m. Eastern 10 Central. I had to come on a little earlier today, but please join me tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern 10 Central, here in Hanson Awareness Radio, guys. And I hope you guys are doing well. And, yep. Oh, wow. Do your own research, you guys. And, yeah, I'm having issues. But, yeah, until next time, guys. I don't want to go out like that. Let me see. Oh, wow.
brothers and sisters, it's Bless Your Energy. It's Brother Wisdom. What's going on, guys? I went on the YouTube community posting and posted about Bebe Kids. And myself and a brother at the workplace, you know, had a really, really big discussion. And, you know, I was telling, you know, we were talking about Bebe Kids and how the movie was so significant, but because at the time we were looking so much at the entertainment in it and laughing that we could not see the message that was being put out. Now you see Bebe left her children. You know, this is done by Brother Robin Harris, you know, Mother Nature rest his soul, you know, they did the brother wrong, just like a lot of our people. But, you know, Bebe sent $20, all right, to have the three of them go to this amusement park, all right, with Robin and his girlfriend and her son. Now, you know, everything is numerical value, 20. They gave $20, two, which is a symbol of angelic energy. Three is the symbol of Trinity. But it was four children in all. So four, which represents perfection. And the youngest was the smartest, who was the baby. But in this thing here with Bebe Kids, it was showing us that you had this Robert Harris' girlfriend, I forget the girlfriend name, or the friend girl, whoever she was, her son was a representation of our brothers and sisters who were caught up in the system. You know, oh, you got to do this, you got to pay your taxes, you got to do that, you know, you got to do it the way the law says. Oh, if the police get behind you, you got to do this, you know. If they take you to court, you got to do this, you got to pay this. This is what they were. Bebe Kids represented those who were free-hearted, who didn't give a damn about nothing. And they were trying to tell him, you know, because they were picking on him. He's like, you know, you gonna do such, you gonna do this and do that. You know, they were picking on him because he was so closed-minded. How many brothers and sisters you know out there are actually closed-minded? You know, how many brothers and sisters you know who are actually sitting up waiting for the system instead of being a free heart and a free mind, focusing on how to free myself? Very few that you know, that you can count on your hand. But it's a whole lot more who caught up in the system. So Bebe Kids was the children and who were like, we're going to have a free heart, we're going to have a free mind, and their energy was so great that the orc beings, or the so-called white people in this movie, were scared of them, and they feared their energy. And they finally woke the young brother up, and he finally realized that he didn't have to be a part of the system. He didn't have to link into the system. He finally realized that I can be free. I don't have to go to school. I don't have to wear a suit. I can wear my locks. I can do what I want to do. I can build what I want to build. So, in the essence of the movie, the energy got so high, and they started doing whatever they wanted to do, and they started fucking that amusement park up, and that amusement park was the representation of this whole governmental structure, because it's just an amusement park. That's all it is. It's not real. It's just an amusement park. It's a game. It's all a fantasy. It's all it is. So they ended up exerting so much energy that even
this white police officer began running from them. These were children. They were nothing but children. But the children represented the energy, the power, showing us how much power that we actually have when we have a free mind and a free heart. And they literally brought that amusement park, that colossal, huge amusement park, down to the ground. And this is where we are going. We are going in this route, okay? We're moving in this route because now we're saying, you know, we got to have a free mind. We got a free heart. Our people say we're tired of this shit. You know, so saw a brother at the gas station. He's like, you know, my day has just started, but I don't want to start it. I could be doing something else. And the thing about it is we could be building. We can be creating. I was watching a video of how to build pyramids from bricks. And I'm like, we can do this. We can start building pyramids from bricks. And we can build huge pyramids from bricks. And we can put crystals and all kind of other things into them. We can really, really do this. Because we got to have a free heart and a free mind. We have been through too much pain and suffering. We have gone through 500 years of genocide. These beings doing whatever they want to do to us on our planet. They telling us what we can do, what we can't do, when we can move, when we can walk, how we can talk. They telling us, and they're on our planet. They're on our land. We have to be baby kids. We got to be free and say, you know what? I don't care. I don't care nothing about you. I don't care nothing about your system. Let's turn this car upside down. Let's chase this police officer down and beat the fuck out of his ass. Show him how much power he got. They don't have no power. See, what they've caused upon us is a mental contusion. When you say a contusion is a bruise. So they mentally bruised us and caused us to fall from something that was so powerful. And they want us to live under the likes of them. They want us to continuously take the mess from them spraying the skies and creating winter time, and we going running out buying coats and shoes and boots, and you know, they want us to continually be victims to their system. They don't want us to wake up. They don't want us to see the reality that we're supposed to be a free mind and a free heart. That's what made us so powerful. It's because we had a free mind and a free heart. So they had to force upon us something that was not real. I just had a deja vu occurrence. So I was saw myself talking, doing the same speech, but I couldn't remember where I saw it at, but I saw myself. I had to be in the astral room or something. But they want to control our entire livelihood, and we can't let them do it. We can't. We have to become the children. And you see, that's why I like baby kids, because they were just free. They were just free. And like we said, these orc beings, they fear. Their greatest fear of us is a free heart. Their greatest fear is an unlearned heart. And when we talk about unlearned heart, we talk about those who are not learned in that system. And the baby kids, they were unlearned in the system. They didn't care about the police. They didn't care about nothing. You had this police officer with a gun on his hip and a badge, and he's running from these four children who were literally wreaking havoc in their little la-la land that they created. They tore that thing down. They brought that amusement park to the ground. And this is where we must be. So we got war. We've got a reason to war. And we're letting them know that, hey, you can't turn us against ourselves anymore. There's many of our people who have worked against their own. We're starting to see that many of them are turning around. Brother Jerome, I got your message too, brother. Hey, my apologies too. All right, my apologies too. We're going to come together one day, the two of us and the rest of the brothers and sisters, because we got a lot of work to do. First, we got to prepare our hearts for this inevitable war so that we can go ahead and take back what belongs to us. But yeah, this is what they fear. They fear a free heart. They fear a soul that knows who he or she is. And all these lessons that we have learned, dark energy, worshiping yourself, the light energy, the radiation, the magnetism, the powers that's within us, the ability to control the forces. I mean, all this stuff that we've learned, we must apply it every day, and we must apply it and put it to the test and see that once I link it to myself and there's no more fear, because that's what the baby's kids didn't have. They didn't have fear. There was no fear in their hearts. They didn't care. And this is where we got to be. I don't care about your system. I don't care about your money. Just like I said, I like the Joker. Why the Joker? He went and broke into the bank and he took all those millions of dollars. He didn't want the millions of dollars for himself. He burnt the shit. He burnt it because he says, I don't need it. He says, you guys are crazy. You are crazy. And this whole system is crazy. They're idiots. And a lot of our people, you know, like we said before, they're following after the system, and they keep doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for different results. But what did the baby kids do? They didn't do the same thing. They were doing different things. Every time you turn around, they was doing something. They was tearing something up, and it's like, I don't care. It's not mine. And this is how we need to be. It's not my system. Why the fuck should I care? Why the fuck should I care? Why should I care if that building burns down? Oh, let me put it on fire for them. Why should I care? So many of our people are stuck in that mindset of, oh, you know, you gotta care for this right here because, you know, we need the money for this and that. We don't need a goddamn thing for these motherfuckers. We don't need no reparations. I saw something about some reparations or whatever. And I'm like, me and the brother was talking, I said, there is no amount of money that these beings can give us to repair, because reparations is repair rations. That's all reparations is repair rations. So you giving us rations of money to repair something. There is no money on the planet that you can give us to repair the damage that you guys did to our people, wiping out entire generations. When we say entire generations, we mean there are generations right now that were on the realm, or that were here on our realm, within our realm, that are no longer here. The entire bloodline has been destroyed. Whole generations gone. Mother, father, sister, brother, grandmother, grandfather, uncle, aunt, cousin. Whole generations are gone. There is no amount of money that you could possibly give, that you orc beings could possibly give, to replace the bloodlines that were completely wiped off the planet.
There's no money. There's no money to give to replace all the trees that you destroyed, all the rivers and the lakes that you destroyed, all the fruit that you destroyed. And the thing about it is, even our ancient fruit, they have our ancient fruit, the seeds of our ancient fruit, boxed away somewhere at some seed distribution or some seed holding place where they have all of our seeds. And I think it was like three different areas, and one of them got one or two of them got flooded out. And I think they have one left where they have all of our seeds. So there's no amount of money that you can possibly pay us to replace all the gold on our land that you've stolen, the diamonds, the precious gems that we use for technology. We didn't use them to hoard them. That was just a meteor strike that happened in Brazil a few days ago, and some pretty large sized meteors, like a few hundred of them, landed. And you guys can look it up and follow it up on yourself. But several hundred of them landed. And this orc government hears about it. And the Brazilians allowed this. And they ran down there and they put a price on the meteors. This is what they do. This is how low they are. They go and put a price on the meteors. You got something that came from the cosmos for the original people. The shit belongs to us. Whatever comes from the cosmos on this planet belongs to us. This is why we got to get ready and be the fucking baby kids and fuck this shit up and take back what belongs to us and not give a damn about nothing. They put a price. They said, oh, this is worth $26,000. So if you got $26,000, you can have this one big stone. I mean, these are nice size meteors that I saw on the thing I was reading. You look it up. The meteor strike that happened in Brazil. And these orc bands put a price on it. $26,000 per meteor. Because this is what they do. They know nothing else but to put prices on things. And our people have got this notion that, well, you got a price on it, we can do it. No, we got to be the baby kids. And the baby kids knows who the enemies are. The baby kids know these orc things are the enemies. Some of our people today don't know the enemies. They have their time. Oh, you can vote for Trump. You can vote for Biden. You can vote for Harris. Guess what? Trump, Biden, and Harris, they're all pedophiles. Huh? They're all pedophiles. Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Michael Jordan, they're all pedophiles. Oprah, Ellen, all of them, they're all pedophiles. So the thing about it is, we have an enemy among us, and we have to be the baby kids, and we just have to not give a fucking damn and have a free heart and a free mind and just fuck they shit up and fuck them up also, because they got an answer. Their entire species has got an answer for what their forefathers did, and their forefathers did a great disservice to us, a great, great disservice, and we've got to bring the vengeance. Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. Who's the Lord? We are the lords. We are the landlords. We own this planet. We so-called black people are the owners of this planet. And very soon, we're going to have to show our true ownership, because we're going to have to become the baby kids. And we're going to destroy everything that they created and bring this whole goddamn amusement park that they created to the fucking ground. Don't give a damn about the teddy bears and the little whatever else, you know, that, and the teddy bears and all that represents the money and the cars and the job positions and all that. Don't give a fuck about none of this shit. Just tear the motherfucking shit to pieces. That's what we got to do. We got to become the baby kids. and say, you know what? It's over. It's over. And anybody who wants to depart and say, I don't want to do that, you hold your hands up, you say, you trying to, it ain't time to go yet. What, you trying to leave us? Uh-uh. You joining in with us because you're a part of this. Yeah. We got to become the baby kids and not give a fuck at all. All right, guys. Just a little motivation because we're going to have, we're getting ready for war. You can, and these orc beings can feel this shit in the air. They can feel it in the air. You feel it in the atmosphere. It's all over. The tension is high because we're ready to get rid of them. No more negotiations, no mercy, no nothing. And we're going in, and we're going in head first. And like one, the brother was saying, he said, you know what, how are we going to get the heads of them? I said, how do you think you get the heads? When you start cutting the tails off, that head going to turn around. You cut the tail of the snake off, that head going to turn around. That's when you get the head, because now he's weak. He don't have anyone to fight for them. Their tail is their regular people, the police, the FBI, all that shit. Fuck them motherfuckers up. Show the true power of who we are. We're nature's children. And all those who are confined in the system, we wake their ass up to and really let them know. Slap the fuck out of them. Let them know, hey, wake your ass up, motherfucker. Wake up. Wake up. You've been asleep too long. Let's go to war. Because we've been through too much. All right, guys. Pass this message on to you. Let's become the baby kids. Let's not give a fuck. That's on 100. All right. Peace to you all. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say peace to you all? Oh, I must be tired. But you know what? Inner peace for you guys. You got to have inner peace, because in order to have chaos, you must have inner peace. You got to have inner peace in order to show chaos. Tornado has inner peace. The most peaceful part of the tornado is inside of it. On the outside of it is complete, pure chaos. So you got to have inner peace. So I'll say inner peace to you all. But as usual, chaos. Chaos. We bring chaos to this entire planet. Global chaos. All power to the multi-chakra celestial angelic beings. Chaos to you all.